This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
In the last few years, the public was captivated by the sudden appearance of large craters in Siberia. Scientists suggested these were mounds called pingos containing methane, which then erupted. They blew up. Now there is a flurry of new science finding the sea around the Arctic is pockmarked with big craters, as large as half a mile across or 0.8 kilometers. There are also undersea mounds which contain methane. Are they a danger to shipping? Can they be drilled and captured as an energy source? As the climate warms the seas, will these undersea pingos blow out a new wave of methane to warm the planet even more? I have a lot of questions. Fortunately, we have as our guest one of the bright young minds in the field. Pavel Serov is working on his PhD at the Norwegian Research Institute called CAGE. That is the Center for Arctic Gas, Hydrate, Environment, and Climate at the University of Tromsø in Norway. Even as he studied in 2015, Pavel Serov already published an important paper on subsea methane activities in the South Kara Sea. That was in the Journal of Geophysical Research. Now he has a new paper in the prestigious Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. From Norway, Pavel Serov, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hi.
Okay, before we get to the science behind your new paper, why do you think there is so much interest now in seabed methane in the Arctic?
Well, we know that the Arctic, same as the rest of the world, is experiencing increase in temperatures. And the Arctic is getting warmer and warmer, and the process of warming in the Arctic is much, much faster than in the rest of the world. So that is why there is a big attention to processes happening in the Arctic Ocean nowadays.
I've been looking at several new papers about undersea mounds containing methane and hundreds of craters, and I see four interlocking motives for the drive to study this phenomenon. And Pavel, I would like to run each of these ideas by you for your comments. The first is a quest for pure science. We want to know what we don't know, and we want to complete a geologic history of that area. Is that part of your work?
Yeah, it is definitely a big part of what I'm doing.
A second motive has been suggested, namely the need to predict the risk of energy exploration in the Arctic, and perhaps even the safety of ships crossing the Arctic Sea as an alternative route to and from Asia. Pavel, can eruptions from undersea mounds be a danger to shipping?
Yes, I've heard this question before. But unfortunately, we cannot really even predict the scenario when the ship will ever sink due to ebullition of methane gas from the seafloor. In theory, it is possible. There have been few episodes when oil companies drilled through the gas pockets, and then the gas bubbles, well, basically decreased the buoyancy of the water column, and then it triggered some consequences to the drilling vessels. But nothing dramatic happened. None of those vessels or drilling platform sank. So far, this phenomenon has never been observed. If it can be observed in the future, well, we don't know. But from my perspective, it seems highly unlikely, first of all, because amounts of methane stored in one particular place, in one particular gas pocket, is not sufficient to significantly decrease buoyancy of any vessel.
Well, that's good. A third possibility is a desire to find more energy resources. Pavel, are corporations or countries interested in tapping into the methane that is trapped under the sea?
Yeah, there is a certain interest from oil and gas companies in extracting gas, extracting methane gas from gas hydrates. And there have been few, well, quite a substantial advances in that. Yeah, I've heard that Chinese and Japanese companies managed to produce some methane gas from subsea gas hydrate reservoirs. So far, it's just the first attempt to do that. So we don't know if it's going to be, the future of the oil companies or not. But we know for sure that technologies now exist. So extraction of methane or other hydrocarbon gases from gas hydrates is possible.
And a fourth motivation is to assess the risk of more methane reaching the atmosphere, which could increase global warming. What do you think about this?
Well, yes, of course. But to me, it seems like there is no big difference between what exact methane is being combusted or what exact methane is being used as an energy source. It doesn't matter if it's coming from gas hydrates or if it's coming from terrestrial or offshore gas reservoirs. I mean, if it reaches the atmosphere, it has exactly the same global warming potential. So the source of the methane is not such a substantial question to be answered.
Now, Pavel Serov, let's look at your science, beginning with the 2015 paper. The title was Methane Release from Pingo-like Features Across the South Kara Sea Shelf, an Area of Thawing Offshore Permafrost. I suppose we should start with the idea of what is a pingo?
Yeah, what we call pinga is a mound. Mound composed of some soils or bottom sediments, if it's a subsea mound. And also those mounds incorporate some solids. Often they incorporate permafrost, so it's a frozen ground. But in some cases, as we, for example, observe in the Barents Sea, they can also contain some gas hydrates. So basically it's a seabed structure or land structure, a positive structure that has something solid inside.
Are the pingos that exploded on land and captured quite a bit of attention in Siberia when these craters formed, are those the same as the structures that you were studying under the seabed?
Yes, they think they might be the same. The structures we've discovered in the South Kara Sea, they also related to permafrost, but it's not on-land permafrost, it's so-called subsea permafrost. In fact, it's the same. It's just frozen soils and the bottom sediments. But the difference is that they're covered with a water column. So what we think we've discovered in the South Kara Sea is a mound that eventually might develop to a crater when the mound collapses.
Could you explain to us a little bit about the geologic and climate history of the area you studied so that we can understand why something that was once land is now the seabed? How did that happen?
Yeah, during the glaciation, the last glacial maximum in this part of Eurasia was approximately 22,000-23,000 years ago. Substantial amount of water was incorporated in ice sheets. So during that time, there was less water in the world ocean, meaning that the sea level was much, much lower than it is today. So some of the areas that are now covered with water were lands 20,000 years ago. So those lands, those terrestrial areas were subjected to very cold atmosphere. And of course, the ground, well, get frozen. So that is why we have permafrost in those areas.
What is the source of the methane in the mounds? Does it come from a geologic process or is it a byproduct of microbial life?
Yeah, according to our analysis, according to geochemical analysis of methane, we think that it's microbial gas. So it's recently produced gas in a shallow part of sediment or soils.
Yes, that paper goes against the conventional wisdom about the origins of this methane. I think a lot of people thought that it was ancient, but now you say it's more recent. How do you know that?
Well, what typically is called ancient methane is thermogenic methane, methane that has been formed deep inside the sediment sections, somewhere at 2-3 kilometers deep perhaps. So that's the gas that oil companies usually use while explore. Microbial gas is something, yeah, in theory, microbial gas can also be very, very old. But since it forms at very shallow parts of the sediment section, it tends to escape very rapidly. I mean, it's not covered by any thick sediments, any thick strata. So it migrates very quickly from sediments to the water column and then potentially to the atmosphere. So when we see some microbial gas involved in any kind of process on the seabed, we presume that it's a relatively young gas.
And how concentrated was the methane in the two mounds that you studied in the South Kara Sea?
If compared to the background concentrations of methane or the concentrations of methane in surrounding areas, the pingos, those mounds, contained up to 1,000 times higher methane concentrations.
You are listening to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest has become an expert on undersea methane in the Arctic. He's Pavel Serov. And that methane may be a new frontier of science, a new energy source, or a grave danger to the climate. Well, now we turn to your latest new work as a lead author, just published in the Proceedings of the National Academy. The title is Postglacial Response of Arctic Ocean Gas Hydrates to Climate Amelioration. Pavel, that sounds like the climate motivation is very strong in this paper.
Yeah, indeed. The climate motivation is strong. We think that the mountains covered in the Barents Sea, close to Svalbard Archipelago, could be potentially, well, underestimated sources of methane, at least to the water column. What is also interesting is that natural climatic variability drove to formation of those mounds something around 14 to 12,000 years ago. So development of these structures is closely linked to natural climatic variability.
Yes, your research shows large amounts of methane were released after several deglaciation periods, including the Heinrich event. Could a very rapid melt in Greenland now stimulate an undersea release of methane, including perhaps explosions?
Well, yeah. If the Greenland continues to melt, some areas where subglacial gas hydrates can be stored nowadays might start releasing methane. It's very hard to make any prognosis on that. I mean, Greenland is melting. We know that it's melting quite rapidly, but we don't know what's going to happen next year or in 5 or 10 years. We don't even know how the atmospheric temperatures are going to change. So we can hardly make any predictions of when and if it's really going to happen in the future. I mean, when and if such mounds can form in Greenland. But there is still a possibility.
Something you said is quite key. You said that the methane is released into the water column. Do we know how much of methane that seeps out of the ocean beds is actually reaching the atmosphere?
Yes, it is a very good and hot question. Now, at the water depth where those mounds were discovered, it's approximately 380 meters. Almost none of the methane gets to the atmosphere, because we know that within this thick water column, there is plenty of microorganisms that oxidize methane to CO2. So the methane flux from the sediments gets substantially reduced in the water column. However, we know that there are several sites where the exchange of methane from sea surface to the atmosphere is recorded. It's mostly very shallow sites where the travel time of methane bubbles from the sediments to the sea surface is very short. It means that it has less time for methane oxidation. It means that it has higher potential for being transported to the atmosphere.
In an email, you wrote that the release of more seabed methane is not triggered by surface warming, which I assume includes the abnormally hot, low ice summers of recent years in the Arctic. Tell us about what the real trigger is.
We think that the real trigger is changes of temperature on the bottom. And it's not directly connected to, at least not at this water depth, not directly connected to the increase in sea surface temperature, simply because this thermal wave does not propagate that deep in the water column. But what does matter is the bottom water circulation. We now know that this area, the area where the gas hydrate mounds are, is highly affected by West Spitsbergen current. It's relatively warm current bringing water similar to what Gulf Stream actually brings to the northern hemisphere. So it's warm and relatively salty water. So if those water masses change, if they become warmer, it might destabilize gas hydrates on the seafloor or close to the seafloor.
Where else have scientists found this methane mound phenomenon in the sea? How about Canada, for example?
In Canada, there is several locations where gas hydrate pingas were mapped, but those locations are mostly within subsea permafrost regions. So it's a quite similar scenario to what we have seen in the South Kara Sea.
And you're currently working at the Norwegian project called CAGE. Another CAGE scientist, Karen Andreessen, just published a new paper in the journal Science on June 2nd. How does that paper relate to your research?
We think that these two papers actually come together. In the paper about the craters, she says, or we think, that the craters form as, when methane hydrates destabilized on the seafloor, which caused substantial release of free gas into the sediments, and then it caused overpressure and eventual blowout. However, what was before the blowout itself. We think that something similar to gas hadrotingus was formed on the seafloor. And that's exactly what we're observing now at another location in the Barents Sea, at Stulfjordene. So the story, the paper about Tingus, is actually a description of the process that is probably one step behind the formation of the craters. So these two articles is basically a description of two steps of one process.
Is the research for these papers funded in St. Petersburg or by the Norwegians?
It is funded by the Norwegians. It is fully funded by KH, Center of Excellence for Gas Hydrates.
Pavel, we can't avoid the internet of people who worry that the Arctic will become a source of masses of methane which could overwhelm our climate system. These include scientists in the Arctic Methane Emergency Group, or AMEG. Are you really concerned more methane will come out of the northern seas as the climate warms?
Yes, the area of the, well, of the major concern is area where this subsea permafrost is distributed. Those seas are very shallow, and as I mentioned previously, those areas are very, well, they're very prone to thermal influence from the atmosphere. They can warm very fast, and they can release a lot of methane. Also, since the shallow water depth, or due to the shallow water depth, the methane released from the sediments can easily be reaching the sea surface and can potentially be transported to the atmosphere. So shallow permafrost areas are of the biggest concern nowadays.
What do you think of the work of Dr. Natalia Shakova and Professor Semilyatov of Tomsk Polytechnical University? Both of them have been guests on Radio EcoShock.
Yes, I'm familiar with their works on the East Siberian shelf. We all cite those publications now. We don't know if it's really the case when during storm events more methane is being transported to the atmosphere. We think it is a possible scenario. However, what we also think that this hypothesis has to be tested in many other locations. It has to be tested in different weather conditions in different times of year. So the theory has to be proven.
As you said, the Japanese have mounted an exploration ship to try capturing undersea methane from the frozen form known as clathrates. China as well. Do you think Russia or Norway are interested in seabed methane as a commercial energy source?
I honestly don't think that Russia and Norway are really interested in methane hydrates as a commercial source, just because both countries have quite a lot of so-called conventional deposits of both oil and gas. And those conventional deposits are so much easier to explore, and I guess they're so much more profitable than gas hydrate deposits.
Now, is the size and shape of these undersea structures determined by the methane within them? Are they sort of like mounds with a bubble of frozen gas lifting the seafloor? What determines the shapes that you're finding?
We don't know yet, but we only can guess now. Well, our best guess is that methane flux largely regulates the shape and the size of the structures. So the diameter of the structures is regulated by the size of the permeable zone in sediments along which free gas migrates and along which gas hydrates are being formed.
Scientists have found undersea pingos in many parts of the Arctic Ocean, as you've said. Does anyone know if there are similar structures around Antarctica, or does a different geological history there in the South Polar seabed make this less likely?
We think that the structures like this might be discovered in Antarctica as well. Fortunately, there is much less data coming from Antarctica. It's much more remote. It's much more difficult to work there. As far as I know, there is only a few locations where seabed methane release have been mapped before. So there is very few data. We cannot say if it's possible or not yet. But we presume that if we have much more data, we would find something like craters or possibly gas hydrate pingos, because the geological evolution was definitely not a factor that would allow us to rule out the formation of craters or pingos. It's quite similar to what's going on in the Arctic.
Where do you think this research into Arctic methane under the sea is leading? What still needs to be done here?
We're definitely sure that drilling is needed, because with our tools nowadays, we can only see what's going on in very shallow sediments. So we can only recover 2, 3, 4 meters of sediment sections. If I had an ability to go deeper, we would definitely tell more stories, and we would be able to look at much older times. So that's essential.
You know, I've talked to scientists who say, why spend money going to Mars? We already have a new frontier that we need to explore, and that is the seabed with all the resources and the things that science can discover there.
Well, yeah, this is true. We still have a lot of unknown places. We still have a lot of areas to explore. Yeah, even in the Arctic. And of course, Antarctic region is, it's comparatively unexplored areas, and there is plenty of other locations where we would like to go. So yeah, there is a long list of things to do in the ocean as well. Well, I'm not saying that it's not worth going to Mars.
Well, finally, I want to know, can you assure our listeners that warming seas will not lead to a serious or even catastrophic release of methane in the Arctic? Do we know the answer to that question yet?
We definitely know that not so much of methane will reach the atmosphere. We do know that if we continue increasing global temperatures, we would probably increase the input of methane to the world ocean. There is one risk connected to it. We don't really know how much capacity of reworking those methane emissions the world ocean has. If it's limited or not, we don't know yet.
We've been talking with a young scientist already publishing research in top journals. He's from the Faculty of Geology at St. Petersburg State University in Russia. But Pavel Serov is currently at Center for Arctic Gas, Hydrate, Environment, and Climate at the University of Tromsø in Norway. The new paper, just out from the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, is titled Postglacial Response of Arctic Ocean Gas Hydrates to Climatic Amelioration. It's by a group of scientists from Norwegian universities and from the Center of Glaciology in Wales, UK. Our guest, Pavel Serov, is the lead author. Pavel, thank you so much for sharing your work with us.
Thank you.
It may sound like Pavel Serov is not concerned about methane coming from the Arctic seafloor. He says methane that may blow out from the deep mounds he is studying, some 380 meters or 1,200 feet deep, should be absorbed by the microbiotic life in the water column, although the oceans may have a limit to how much methane it can process. At that depth, hotter surface waters have no real impact. Only a change in circulation at the bottom affects these clathrates. But that is in the deeper waters around the Norwegian Arctic. It's a different story in the shallow seabeds in eastern Siberia. Surface heating can affect the frozen seabed there, and that acts like a cap to the methane below. Some will be released. There are bubbles of methane measured arriving at the surface and going into the atmosphere. Scientists are still trying to determine how much. Almost separate from all this is the theory raised by Natalia Shakova from the University of Alaska and Igor Samilyatov from Tomsk in Russia. They suggest that an undersea landslide could release a burp of methane up to 50 megatons. Almost like a methane bomb. That alone could push up the Arctic temperatures, and possibly global temperatures, for a period up to about 10 years. Such an event would stimulate other feedbacks, like melting permafrost, which could continue for centuries. But as our guest Pavel Serov says, this is still a theory under investigation. Others say it is like waiting for an earthquake. It may happen, but when? In the next 10 years, or the next 300 years? Out of all this, there is a pretty clear picture that in the past deglaciation events, and we're in one now, large amounts of methane were released from a frozen state in the sea. These releases added warming and may have created an abrupt shift of climate. Some scientists suggest that melting clathrates alone brought about catastrophic climate change and a new age. For now, it's difficult to know how much methane will emerge from the seabed in our lifetimes and how fast. Scientists at the Norwegian Institute CAGE, Russian institutes, the Chinese, and the Japanese are all working to find those answers. I'll continue to report on this issue as it develops. Radio EcoShock is dedicated to bringing you the hard truth from around the world. Thank you for listening again this week.